Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Best Show Ever podcast. It's the podcast where we talk about the best concerts that people have ever seen in their lives. I'm your host, Cam Hurt, and this is a pretty cool week we got going on here. I'm super excited for the two guests that we have on, but specifically this interview was a real blast for me. This episode is with Richmond Fish fan Warren Carroll. Now, Warren is a guy who saw Fish in the 90s. He's seen Fish in the current era they're in right now. He's a longtime Fish fan. He's got over 230 shows under his belt. And so he just lends some awesome insight into what it was like to see Fish back in the day in the 90s, what it's like to see Fish now. And Warren is also a part of a group called the Afro-AmeriFans, which is a group of African-American Fish fans. And so he sheds light on that experience as well, being a Black fan, getting into it back in the day, carrying that through, what that's been like all the way through his many years on the road with Fish. Warren is a guy who reached out asking to do the show. And first of all, I've been really lucky to have a lot of you reach out with interest in doing the show, which is super, super kind. It's really hard to get people to want to do anything, whether it's getting them to want to buy tickets, getting them to want to watch something, getting them to want to read something, getting people to vote, that kind of stuff. Very difficult. And so the fact that you guys want to be a part of the show and want to be interviewed and want to have your stories told is a huge compliment to me, and I really appreciate it. And the way that Warren went about it was just exactly how you would like it to be done. Reached out with a really nice message about what he's liked about the show so far, and obviously flattery works really well on attention seekers like me. And so, yeah, I mean, we ended up talking about Fish and art and where he stands on music and where he stands with Fish these days. And for me, it was a no-brainer to have him on to tell some of these stories. And the interview was better than I could have expected. And so truly, if you're listening to this episode, I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as we had fun recording it. We get into like literally everything there is to know about Fish, what it was like back then, tape days, what do you wear to the shows back then? What was it like getting to the shows back then? What's it like now? Are some things better now? Are some things better then? Yeah, I mean, all that kind of stuff. It was super, super cool to get a chance to talk to him. And so glad that he was able to take some time to share his stories. A couple shout outs that I want to make this week on the podcast. One is the guy who made the shirt that I'm wearing right now, Sludge Co. This is a guy who has sent me some stuff. You're going to see him at things like fan art, and you'll see him on lot selling these shirts. But he just makes really great quality stuff, quality shirts, quality designs on them. He's not a guy who's stealing anyone's art. He's not a guy who's like doing anything shady or shifty within the scene. He just makes good stuff and puts it out there for people to get. And so this is a cool Jerry shirt that he made. And on the back, there's a Jerry with his infamous briefcase here. I'm going to squat down a little bit so you can see it. Pretty cool piece there. Definitely get yourself one of those. Another group I want to shout out, another merch maker that I want to shout out is Rad and Refined. Rad and Refined, I don't know if you've seen the Trey necklaces that I've worn before, or if you've seen Billy Strings wearing these like bedazzled out little Trey necklaces. Those are from Rad and Refined, and those are pretty awesome. That's my big review on those. I've been loving adding it to my show outfit. They're like bedazzled. It's quality merch. It's quality jewelry that is made really well out here in LA. So you know it's good. But just adding a little bling to the outfit, you know, and a little something to the show outfit. You'll hear me and Warren talk about show outfits in the 90s that had no bling whatsoever included. And so that's just about enough intro out of me. Sit back and relax and enjoy this conversation that I had with Warren. But first, here's a little bit of music from Loom with the song What I Mean.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you get to any shows this year? Did you?
Yeah, this summer I went to, I think it's 5 or 6 shows this summer. And the thing is, I'm like, I do this every year. I'm like, when I started doing so many shows in a row, I'm 43, getting ready to turn 44 years old. And in my mind, when shows come out, I get the same exact feeling for when I was 20, 21 years old. So in my mind, yeah. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing that. Then once I get to start doing this and that, second, third day, my body and my mind, I'm just like, I think I bit off a little too much I can handle. But it always ends up okay. So like, this is exactly what happened this summer. I think I did like the Atlanta shows and then the 2 shows after that. It was in North Carolina and a show after that. After that third night of Atlanta, I was like, I might want to go home. But then I was like, you know what? I talked myself into it. And finished strong. But at the same time, it's like, man, back 10, 15 years ago, I would have never had that idea. But I made it happen.
Do you get that idea because you've seen, I mean, you told me you've seen, you said 250 shows?
It's plus 232. I actually did a really good check before we did this, actually, to make sure the number was correct. It was 232.
I was going to make sure, yeah. No, but I mean, like, does that, like, seeing that many shows kind of play into, like, you know what, I can head out early? Like, I've seen...
Great question. I have never left out early for the simple fact that I've seen some amazing encores. But at the same time, I do hate to use the word jaded. Like, not only do I like Phish, I am also a musician, and I can see music, hear music. That is actually my thing. And so I remember I posted in the Phish, 2004 group one time. And I just came from seeing, it was like the Trey Band thing, the recent one that was actually badass. And I posted after that show, I was like, to me, Trey originality and playing and all that was just as good as the 5 to 6 shows that I saw. And people took that and ran with it and acted like I was the, oh, you jaded that. And I was like, no, you got to understand what I'm saying. I was trying to explain it to them. It was like the space and all of this, because when you see some, everything, it seems so planned and calculated. I see a lot of shows right now and I can see it before it happened, call it before it happened. And that sometimes plays against me, you know what I mean? Goes against me. But when I saw that Trey show, it was so, I could just see it in Trey. It was so fresh and so much space and so new to him. And that made me feel good. So when I typed that in there, some people said, maybe you just need to slow down going on the shows. And that actually had me thinking about it. But you know what? I would never complain. I would never complain about a show. But like I said, it's just that thing sometimes is just not as much there.
Well, what was the first show you ever saw? And by the way, we can cover non-Phish stuff if you'd like, but it sounds like
I want to do both. I like to do both because, like I said, I cover every part of music around the spectrum.
Yeah.
So my first non-Phish show, I think I actually hit my mom up because I've always been into music, and it was like, I think she said I was 10 years old. And you know what the first show was? The same was the first, actually second show that I saw Phish was the Hampton Coliseum. Wow. So I was 10 years old. It was 1990, late 89, 1990. And I went to see a group called New Edition. It was with Bobby Brown. Huge Bobby Brown back in the day. Like, I was performing. Yeah. So, like, he used to wear those suits and all. Like, I was like, that's my guy. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, and just like the powerful dance moves.
Yeah, it was like, he's got boom. I would never forget and went. And it wasn't just the choreography dance and singing. I was like, that's life. I didn't even think in my 8-9-10-year-old brain that shows had crazy lights. I was like, and so that was my first show overall. But my first Phish show, I think it was the summer of 97. I think it was the Virginia Beach show of 97. Yeah. And I had been listening to Phish, I say 5 to 6 months before that. I think I should start a little bit before saying, like, I went to an all-white private school in 8th grade. Went from coming from where I'm from, all black, kind of poverty and all that.
And where are you from?
Suffolk, Virginia. It's like near Virginia Beach and Hampton, in the Tidewater area. And I end up transferring to a private school, National Suffolk Academy, which is almost all white at the time. Huge culture shock. Huge culture shock. But my first group of friends were these kids. At the time, they had this name, but they're all hippie-ish kids. Smoke pie, you know what I mean? Listen to Fleetwood. I didn't choose them, but these are kids who kind of just came to me like, oh, kind of like, you know what I mean, took me in or whatever. So, of course, in 8th grade, their older brothers and sisters or whatever was listening to a lot of Dead, a lot of Zeppelin, but they also was listening to Phish. So we kind of stole some tapes or whatever. Like I said, this was like 1994, 1995. We kind of took these tapes. Yeah, man, long time ago. But so the first Phish show came, and I knew most of the songs because I listened to them the first 4 or 5 months. So the first, it was such much of a culture shock. Like, the music was cool. I remember this feeling, but I walked around now just like, I've never seen anything like it in my life. Especially thinking about somebody like me coming from where I come from, then. At the first time, I'd never been around that many white people, but one time I was like, oh, like, it was insane. But I didn't feel out of place. But like most of the time, I was just mostly just observing everything. The music was cool. And I remember going in there, and the first 4 songs, I was like, I had no idea what songs was. But you know what happened? those were the first four times they played. It was like it was heard. So I was so stunned because it was the first show of the American tour that summer. And they was in Europe, and they debuted those songs in Europe. But when they came to America, Virginia Beach was their first show. So Trey did give a little spit. He was like, "All right, we're gonna debut a few songs I never played in America before." So I kind of like made myself feel like, okay. I was like, "Phew!" I didn't feel like I was that much of a rookie. I didn't know any of those songs, but
no one did.
Yeah, exactly. Great show though, great show. I do remember that, and like I said, nothing like getting that show, getting the tape, and coming back.
Yeah,
it's kind of like I'm an athlete too, and it's always about it's the game film. And we used to treat you know these tapes like game film. So of course after the show, me and my buddies and my best friend will always get it ASAP, and we just go over the tape. So the second show was the 11/21/97, the infamous. That was when the Mercy and the Rescue, and I'll consider that was my best show.
That's such an incredible show. Yeah. I mean,
I could talk circles. That was
my
second, but my real, like I said, the first one was just like, it was so much. I was very prepared when it came to come to Hampton. You know what I mean? Like I was dressed you know what I mean? Like I felt like I had some sense of
what was the fit back then? Like, and also I kind of want to talk about breaking down shows back then too, but like what was the fit for Hampton 97?
To me, skaterhood. I was kind of skating a skateboard, a Grateful Dead kind of hoodiest thing. Definitely some corduroys because it was cold. You know what I mean? It was definitely cold back then. But the thing was, it was not back in those days. You get to the show, I mean, extremely early. And not only did you get there early, you could spend the night in the parking lot back in those days too. So you didn't have to leave. The parking lots didn't close back in those days. You know what I mean? So I remember that. We just stayed out there to 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. But I remember actually feeling very prepared. Like when I got to the first show, Virginia Beach, I was like nervous of some sort. Like looking back now, because it's like, this is going to change your life. Like, you know what I mean? Like you kind of get that sense. And I mean, looking back now, like my life has not been the same, like not even close to the same since that day. But the Hampton show, I had my tufts tucked out a little bit. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I found me some micro. That back in those days, micro dots and jello tabs was less like the thing. So I got my micro dot. I was ready to go. So I walked into the show, and they did it again. They end up starting with something that I didn't know. They started with the Motion Rescue. I was like, I think it was a Rolling Stones cover.
It's Rolling Stones, and I mean, you got like they're singing it in a high pitch, and everything. You're like, hell,
and I'm kind of looking at it, like, nah, here we go. But yeah, man, that
look, are these micro dots fucking me up right now?
they definitely wasn't strong back in the day, but I remember, like, but as time went on for that show, I never felt so connected to. Not only just the music, but Trey at that time. Like when I was younger, Trey, his sound, his look was just like another world to me. You know what I'm saying? Me being a musician myself, I played drums my whole life and just being so inspired by music and musicians or whatever. Like my first kind of visual connection, just being able to see, because in Virginia Beach, I really couldn't see. I'm just walking around. But I remember that day just like being laser focused on him just doing his thing for the first time. I'm like, holy my God. And he had me. Michael Dodds had me too, but just staring at that, just like, this is fucking amazing. And so I remember
he's the kind of guy.
Yeah.
He is that he's so polarizing, you know? Like
exactly.
And he's got that grip on everybody, and you can feel that from the crowd, and you like you're like, wow, I'm like pulled in right now, man.
I hit you up that night. It was the night, which is crazy timing, was the night of the anniversary to that show. That's the night you hit me up, and I told you that. I was like, crazy timing. I was coming from New York. I was coming from the North, and I was playing that show, and I was like, holy hell, you did just hit me up. But I was just listening to that show, just thinking back, man, little me, let me see, 16 years old me, just flashing back. And when I got down to the split open amount, I literally remember I cried. I cried for a good 10 minutes. Doing split open and melt, just like the very calm environment. I remember me just standing up and just bawling because it was like such a huge revelation for me. You know what I mean? I was like, this is a totally different world. Like me coming from where I come from, then being involved in this thing. And like, I just, the parking lot scene, everybody was so friendly. Everybody was so nice. And then this music was just so, so like hit my soul. It was strong.
Yeah.
And anyway, man, it was, I never forget it. So every year I do watch that on, I listen to that show every single year on an anniversary. So yeah, that would be forever. I don't care who I see and what happens. That will be forever my first, my best show ever, for the simple fact that I feel like it was like, it baptized me within this culture and the stuff that I love, the music that I love now.
Yeah. I mean, was that, so is Trey, is that band like kind of the band that gets you to play, start playing music yourself, and like do they influence the music that you play right now?
Yes and no. I am my I would say my favorite genre of music that was that to my ear this is easy, it would be jazz. I am a hardcore jazz fan when it comes to playing drums. Drummers like Stan Moore, you know what I'm saying, Adam Deitch, like those like are my favorite. I think it's kind of like the New Orleans type of jazz, and blues is like my soul. But like I said, Fish has a lot of elements of both of those. You know what I mean? So yeah, I would say jazz.
They play with so much. They dabble with so much. Mm-hmm. You know, they can like, they find themselves in all these different types of pockets that are satisfying, and that, and like, and it's very playful, you know, like all of they're truly like, at play, you know, it feels like they're like rehearsing and no one's even there, you know?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that's, I mean, and like with the jazz sensibility, is that like what you're playing nowadays? Like, is that what you play? Or
to be honest, man, I have been played in a band with, I'd say good 3 years for the song. I've been much more of like producing right now. Like I started my own kind of a music label like 2 or 3 years ago, for the simple fact that playing in a band requires a lot of time that I just don't have, like band practice and staying out kind of late at night, going to shows, staying out late at night and doing that. I realized at this point in my life, not only the time management, but the lifestyle that comes with playing in a band, I just can't physically afford to be doing that because I have a family or whatever. It's like I have to keep 10 toes down in that. So what I can do is, like you said about this mic, I can get here and have production. I can go out and have a singer. I can have a guitarist here to send me some music here, and I can sit at my house and do it. So that has become my new band, with just having members all around sending me music and stuff like that. So that's what I do.
I mean, hey, that's been the same thing with me with comedy. It's been a lot easier to sit here and make comedy on my phone than have to be out at a club every single night. Oh yeah, I mean, like, you know, be at a club and, you know, you're like drinking more and you're like, you know, out all night and you're like doing all that. You're not even like trying to, you know, be that way. It's just the nature of it. And so,
but it's cool. New. I get it. It's a part of it's a part of that. That's the one thing about me with anything that I enjoy. If I enjoy it, you have to take the not so good with the bad. That's all a part of it. You know what I mean? So it's not that I have anything against it. I still, like I said, I still can love to go out and see music as much as I can.
Yeah. Is there stuff, anything recently that you've seen? And again, this can be Fish or this can be not Fish. That's just been exceptional, or
anything I've seen recently
that's been like really, really good.
Oh man.
Either Fish or not, you know?
Yeah. I think I'll say music locally, man. This is a guy, DJ Williams, who's an amazing jazz guitar. He is kind of the big person around in my area in Richmond, Virginia, is where I live right now. And he's been at it for a long time. He plays guitar with Card Distantine Universe. But like, I always love going out to see him. But like I said, I love jazz. And there's a drummer called Nico. Yeah. He's amazing. Plays drums from him as well. But DJ, man, he has it. He is probably one of the top 10 jazz guitars I've ever seen. He's amazing. So whenever he comes around, it's always a good time. And I love learning stuff every single time. The thing about music, man, like you think you've seen it all, think you've heard it all, but there's always somebody somewhere practicing something and doing something. Like I said, there is only a set amount of notes. You know what I mean? And you think that you would hear all the notes at some point, but I love to see and go out and find new talents. And every time I go out to see this guy DJ, he always seemed to come up with something different than I've ever heard before. So.
Man, that's great. And it's great when you can see someone locally and like kind of like watch them progress too. Yeah. And you can see them show after show after show.
And it's good to support too. That's the one thing about you need to support. I will say that. Always support local music, man. Look, I personally wish local music just never died, because people don't realize a lot of people like to save their money. Like, I'm not going to go to a show. No, man, there's some local people around here who are just as badass, who needs not only your money, but your time and attention for them to keep on going back and cooking up too. So always support your local talent. I'll always say that.
How do you feel like generally the scene is in Richmond? Do you feel like people are going to shows and like people are seeing like local shows or?
Yeah. I actually ran a promotion, like a group who put on concerts for 10 to 15 years EQ production, and that was literally what we did. I stopped working. We had this group and we would put on concerts 3 to 4 times a week. We had biscuits and all this stuff. That's what we did for a really long time. So we kept this scene rolling, but like I said, you only can do that for so long because of the lifestyle that leads. So like as we did that for a good 10 years 11 years, but then we got to a point the people who were running it and everything, our lives kind of got a little blurry, you know what I mean, to say the least. So we kind of had to pull it back. But we had this city lit for a long, long, long time. And if you go around and ask about EQ and the work that we did, people would speak very, very highly. We spent a lot of time. We put a lot of people on too, like the Letters in the World or all those bands about 10 years ago who was just starting to bubble up. We were some of the first people to give those guys chances, and not only chances, but sell places out. So kind of like to pat ourselves on the back of that, man. We put a lot of people on some really good stages. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And I felt that way even in like a bigger market when I was living in Chicago. In what I was doing with the comedy thing, I'm like, man, there's all this great stuff going on, like that people are just not seeing. And like, it made you want to produce stuff too. Like in the middle of like, I'm trying to figure out how to make things. You're also like, wait, I also kind of want to like make sure that other people are, you know, getting seen. And like, all my friends are so good, you know, and these people around here are good too. And so that's cool. Yeah. That's cool for Richmond. I do want to get back to seeing Fish in the '90s and seeing those shows.
Yeah.
You were talking about how you traded the, you know, tapes and you had those tapes back then.
Oh my gosh.
Were people, and you're also talking about how people are so critical online nowadays. Were people just as critical of Fish in the '90s, or like, what was that conversation?
It wasn't even close. I honestly think I always go back to this point. I think it was a part of Bittersweet Motel. A lot of the part that a lot of people laughed at and thought it was hilarious, but I think that is a really big part that kind of changed this whole trajectory of the scene. Is when Brad walked in. And because before, Brad was talking about reading the things about how people were complaining in his magazine, some write-up, and saying because they don't play the songs exactly, and Trey got upset. It was like, that is not my purpose. I don't come here to play da-da-da. And then Brad came in and he threw the thing, called him a fucking tool, whatever. I think that was a breaking point, because the time before that, Fish had so much liberty to come in there and experiment. And I remember so many shows, Trey played sometimes more rhythm and rhythmic licks than Lee, because there was no pressure. That's why there was 3 or 4 songs. There was never no pressure. There was never no real type A, type B, type C jams, because everything was within the same. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of space and a lot of freedom, man. And so, yeah, man, that was something when I do listen to tapes now, older tapes, I find myself like, this is why people call jaded fans and people talk about the 97s and the 95s so much, not because they thought that Fish as a band is better. Just the music was structured different. You know what I'm saying? Like the music structure was different. It feels like now the music is not bad. It's just that the structure is different. And we're all, it just seems like we're all waiting for the next big thing. Like the next big, like they say, our Ruby Waves being 23 minutes. So that's like four different songs in a Ruby Wave. So everybody's waiting for that next big apex in the song. And it was never that. So you know what I'm saying? It was always everybody's able to chill and relax and let the band do that thing. And now it feels like the band is like feeling they have to keep on like making the thing to keep people's interest, you know? So I think that's kind of the biggest difference.
Feel that way? It's totally. And I get that. What you said about him playing rhythmically, like, you know, it also like the way the band is playing is depending on like how, what they're listening to and like what they're true. Interested in. And in 97 and 98, they're like listening to a lot of funk, a lot of James Brown, like a lot of that stuff. And so
A lot of Afro. And that's kind of what I've been listening to a lot of Afro rhythm. It's called Afro rhythmic music. 15 minute song, and it's just ebbs and flows. It ebbs and flows. And I remember Trey always talked about, especially with his own band, how he doesn't want to ever be no lead. It's like everything comes and goes. You might hear the trumpet more. You might, that comes down, you might hear that more. That is, it makes such much more for not a live thing, but an easier listen when you listen back on some tapes and you're driving in your car. Like you can get lost easily within those kind of rhythmic, you know, rhythmic songs and stuff like that. And so, yeah, man, that, like you say, they call 97 like the funk year, but that's why 97 was so good, because everybody was riding on that 1 and 4. 1 and 4 was heavy bass, heavy boom, boom the whole time. You know what I mean? So everybody was jumping to like, all right, now I got to wait till they try to make this thing. Everybody was always within the same structure of the band.
Yeah. And that, it helps them move as an organism instead of, you know, individual like pieces like an amoeba. Yeah. And there are times where like you said, that Ruby Waves jam, like, or other big jams that you get now can sometimes feel a little bit like, all right, here's the, we're done with this part. And now we're moving on to this part.
But
I feel like this last year in 2023, like we got to see some good shows where like, I went to that show out at the Greek in, Berkeley, and I was just re-listening to that show and re-listening to that 46 minute tweezer, and I'm like, this is good, like this is true like improvisation, like stepping out into like, it feels like there's pockets where they don't, like you said, they're not really getting to anything,
and
you like to hear that, like a confident patience where it's like, we don't have to get it to any, this is perfect right here, what we got right now, you know.
Tweezer is a good song for that too. There's a lot of space in that Tweezer jam for, you know, for nothing to happen, which sounds weird in music, you know what I mean? But that is totally a fish thing, like not playing music but having the music play you, and Tweezer jam has a lot of space for
it. And they've just, since, I mean, think about 40 years of doing this type of music, like how many peaks you've had.
You know, how many, like, 40 years.
Yeah, it's so crazy, like how many times you've built jams, and it's like you gotta find new ways to do it, and you gotta find new ways to be excited about it. But like, it, you know, I feel lucky as a guy who is younger and didn't get to see shows in 1997 that I feel like I feel like I've gotten to see some pretty solid improvisation out of those dudes. And so
the thing with man, back in the too, like the tape days, I will say this, there would never be an era like the tape days, because you got to think about what went into getting the tapes. Like, oh gosh, I sound so old. I hate coming off like this. Like when I go to shows sometimes and I'm talking to people and it was like, that just sound like, no, there really is like an essence in the whole tape structure, getting online and finding the right one and literally talking to the person. You had to like find them, who they are, send them a message and say, how about like this on that? Or like, that was a whole culture, and that's how you meet. It was, and doing, I was doing it like at 15, 16 years old, like really making connections all around the world just to get a tape.
Yeah, and it's crazy that the fish community is like one of the first communities of people who are like really using the internet for that purpose, like connecting with people and like, and collaborate. It's like, and it's over like these tapes and stuff, and like, and now you can get whatever you want, however you want.
I would love to give a shout out to my best friend. His name is Beavis. Beavis is my right hand man, and this guy, is the real MVP. People see me now because I go to all the shows. He kind of slowed down as he got older. But my crazy ass just never slowed down until five, six, 7 years ago. I grew up a little bit, but he was a catalyst. Not only did he get all the tape, he put in all the legwork when it came to me fishing my early days. He got all the tapes. Then the VHSs came. He got all the VHSs. And so when he started doing it, like, he also got a guitar. And that's what got me playing the drums, because he got a guitar and he learned. He became play everything fish all day, learn every trade leg. So when he got that, and we was always together, he was like, you should get a drum. And that's what got me to playing drums and led me to the jazz and stuff I'm at now. So yeah, big props to him, man. And like I said, we still talk all the time. We don't really see as much each other, but we still go to fish shows together. That's still our bond, and we can nerd out because we were huge fish nerds. Like, that's all the information that we had in our head. We were totally fish dwarfs, just like break that shit down like it was no other.
You can just go off a deep end with this stuff. Is he a part of that original group from the school that you transferred to?
Yes, he is. It was him. It was a good five of us. And I just say, the older and older and older I get, I really, really appreciate those guys more than they would ever know. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of those guys, it was just music. But me, it was a whole, like, I bought into the whole, like, the culture of things. Back in, like I said, 96, 97, that was a huge, amazing fish culture. Like, people lived off each other. Like, now it's easy to go to 7 shows in a row because you go to 3 shows here and 2 shows here and 2 shows right next door. You went to a whole 7. Back in the day, there was no double nights. If you wanted to go to 7 shows in a row, your ass is going to have to go from spot to spot to spot to spot to spot to spot. You know what I'm saying? So, it's called legwork. You put in a lot of legwork back in those days. And so, like I said, that group that I hung out with, we did that. You know, when we put that legwork in there together, and that would never get forgotten.
Man, that's incredible. And you got to know the stuff that you and your buddies were doing back then is the stuff that me and my buddies dream about doing.
But doing.
Nowadays. You know, like, now we got to, like, make up for it somehow and go see them at a fucking, massive sphere where they turn into holograms or whatever the fuck.
Which is insane. But like I said, I still got that same, I got to go. Then I was thinking to myself, can I even do 4 nights at the sphere, like in Vegas? You know what I mean? And those Vegas run can be brutal. Like those, like, for somebody like me who don't go out much as I used to go, like barely go out anymore at all. But when I do go to fish, I still have that 23-year-old in me for like the first 2 nights. Yeah. And then the third night, I'm just like, it's brutal. I remember one time, the last time I was in Vegas, actually, I went hard 2 or 3 nights in a row. The last night, completely sober. Actually, it was my 200th show, and that's my claim to fame. My 200th show, I went completely sober, and went in there and I sat there, didn't drink anything. People thought I was a narc.
Yeah, right.
People thought I was like, who is this black guy sitting here and not drinking, not doing anything? They were offering me stuff, and then I'm like, nope. They're like, no.
They're like, right. No. So he's a cop.
He's a cop. So I was like, no, I just want, and after the set breaking out, I was trying to explain it to him. I was like, no, I really just want to enjoy this milestone completely sober. And I'm fucking tired of this
stuff. What show was that?
It was Vegas, not the last one, but the one before that one. When they did the Tavox, I think it was the Kavox thing.
Yeah, the Kavox Fox. Yeah, and you know, Vegas, even more than other fish shows, is a little suspicious. I'm being sorry.
Suspicious. I mean,
more than any other venue. It's kind of like, in Vegas. Is over? Oh man,
exactly. But you know what? I felt good, man. I could say I don't have any ego left in fish. Like, I used to feel like I had to be, especially me coming in the way I did. I feel like I had to look the part, sound the part, just the part, because like that's another Afro-American thing that I was talking to you about earlier. Like, coming from being an a black fish fan, you already are getting the eye, and you get the questions, are you here to sell, are you a nicest person, you get that type of stuff, you know what I mean? So you have to come out there with your throwing your information out there, and I did that for a long time, you know what I mean? But as I got older, man, 7-8 years ago, I couldn't care fucking less. Call me what you want to call me at this point. I'm really just I have past the culture thing. I'm really here just for the music. You can call me what you want to call me. I come in. I don't really even do the parking lot like I used to. I come in there, make a drink, a couple of beers. And by me being on the road for so many times, I always know people, different cities. I say my hey's, I have a long time no see. What do you want to hear tonight? I want to hear this. Come take my spot and go home. You know what I mean? So yeah, it doesn't really bother me as much as it used to. But that was a thing that we used to talk about, as it felt like we had to do so much to even make ourselves feel like a part of things for a while.
And that Afro-Amerifan, that's a group that you're in.
It is.
Or that you're a part of.
My favorite. I love all of those people dearly. And we're from all around different places. And I joined that group probably like six, seven years ago. And they just organically grow. You know what I'm saying? And we talk every day. We all talk all around the world and just share stories and share this. Where you guys are going to be? Where y'all guys going this summer? And it just really feels so good to know that you weren't the only person. Because you got to think about this, at 16 years old, 17 years old, being on a road and being the only one that looked like you, that is a very, you know what I'm saying, subconscious type of thing. You like, your sense of belonging, it's not like you don't feel like you belong, but you just don't look at people, you know, the stairs and all that. So we are all, a lot of us kind of went through that alone because there was no internet. You can't say like, is anybody else going through this in Arkansas? You know, we didn't have that. But now that we do have the internet, we all connected so organically, came and we share stories all the time. And it just feels good. And give a lot of praise and props to those guys. And we are a really close-knit group of friends. And so whenever we go and see another, you know, African-American at any show, we're always like, what's your Facebook? You know what I mean? Because especially for the young one, like, there is a community. There is somebody who looked like you've been through the same thing, probably spent the same thing. We're not trying to persuade you to think of the name. Just like, you know, you're just not alone. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I've experienced so many parts of the history.
Yeah.
You know, as a Black person throughout the whole entire thing, you know, and like, I feel like so many times the story of how, when people get into jam music, or whether it's the Grateful Dead or Fish, or whatever it is, it's like, wow, I showed up at this thing. You know, you even said it when you were talking about Hampton originally, like, I showed up at this thing that I didn't recognize. And it was, you know, this brand new, environment that was like crazy. Like everyone has that part of their story. But for the most part, you know, like, it's all white people, you know, when I show up, maybe it's a different scene that I've never been around, but I still look like everybody there. Like there's not that added layer, you know.
It's not like, yo, how the hell are these people able to sell beer and sell drugs in the open? Where we do that at home? Yes. Not like, it's not
cool.
It's not happening. Like I said, I mean, like, people were not really going to understand just those small subtleties, stuff like that. Like, then you become a part of, you're like, okay, but that is really is it's just a shock all around the world. Like I said, it's not a good thing, it's not a bad thing. It's just take a step back and look at the situation. But I do must say, man, during those early times, man, like, those people were so genuine nice to me. I will say that. Like I said, going to the first show, 96, 97, 98, they didn't like, hey, you're much more later on that I had to do the, well, I've been to this show, I know this song. Back in those days, it just didn't matter. It just didn't matter. Like, they were so welcome and so cool. Like, oh, you're going, you want to go to my car? Just like sharing stories, sharing food. Like, in those times, I couldn't drink back in those days. I thought about that the other day too. Like, we were coming to these shows not drinking, not anything. You know, a little bit of pot, something to trip off of maybe. But like, it was just walking around, just being 16. You know what I mean? 16.
Right.
And just people coming up to you and talking and sharing. So it was like, and I really, I just, for a 16-year-old me who's going through Fish during these days, I knew it's just got to be a lot different. You know what I mean? Like, I just feels like Fish scene right now, it's so, it's a lot more industrialized within the real world. I remember back then, it was like such a huge escape. It was like going in there was a huge line between Fish reality and real life reality. And I always kind of knew that at some point in time that this side will bleed into this side, because the music's good. Word of mouth gets bigger. Like, word of mouth was so small because Fish was just so brand new. The Grateful Dead had just ended during that time, like a year or two. You know what I mean? So more social media stuff was getting bigger. So I remember personally going back to high school, ninth or 10th grade, people were like, what do y'all want? Where do y'all go? We went to fish. Well, I want to go. You're like, so of course, as time grew on, more people who weren't really about that life was going to start to join that music. Really just sometimes just going there just to party. So as time goes on, that innocence, but that pure just connection stuff definitely switched as you got older because more and more people drifted into that side.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it gets a little bit bigger, you know, and it just becomes a different thing. Just comes, you know, things don't stay the same forever.
It's not personal. I mean, fish didn't look in. I remember the feeling like fish don't feel like mine anymore. And that was the thing. It felt like, oh, this is mine. I don't have, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's this thing, like when we got together, like, all right, this is ours. This is our thing. But I don't fault it. I mean, it happens to everything. Everything that is something big now always also started as something like fish. You know what I'm saying? So everybody at some point has always felt that. But like I said, you just kind of got to get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, and especially, it, like you said, it feels like it's another world because when you're anywhere else, anywhere ever, it feels like you can't talk about fish because no one knows what you're talking about.
They have no idea. No idea. They're like, what? What animal?
It does feel like that world has gotten bigger, though. Like the jam world right now is like very far reaching. You know, there's people who are, you know, in like popular positions that are, you know, fans.
And not just because of the music either. You know what I'm saying? That's a big difference. Like, this is like that pocket of music, that pocket of culture is not just big because the music is good. It becomes big for so many other reasons that's uncontrollable by the thing. And then I think that's kind of the part that's kind of, you know what I mean? That makes your person who really got in a really organic way feel like, oh man, damn, that sucks that it's had to turn into this, but also be understandable too. So
what, really quick, before, you know, first of all, been great. Mm-hmm. I've been loving talking about the old days. Mm-hmm. When you talk about there's a lot of different parts of the scene now and it's bigger, like, you know, there are people who use it for a lot of different reasons. There's people who use it for personal gain, you know, like they use it to like make money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What did you feel like the lot scene was kind of like back in the day, like selling shirts and stuff like that? Because now it feels very popular now.
It was very fair trade-ish. It was very, I'm not coming here to overdo my thing for my personal gain. Much more, I am here to share what I have to get what I need. You know what I mean? Not in a necessity, but like, the tickets was a lot easier to share it for. Well, you trading your resource, whatever your thing you have, was done much for to just get to the next level. You know what I mean? Even with the food, even with the selling, whatever you're selling at that time, it felt like people was just coming there just to make it. There was not a whole lot of people coming there with owning business this and owning business that. These are a lot, like I said, it wasn't easy getting from place to place to place to place to like people really had to put their foot in the dirt. And I hate to say, I was one of those people. Like a lot of my friends did come from a lot more money than I did. And so I think that I had to indulge in that side of it a little bit earlier than a lot of the people that I was with, because my parents did everything they possibly could to keep up with what I was trying to do. And it wasn't cheap. We was doing 8 or 9 shows in a row in like 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grade. You know what I mean? Very, very, very early. And so my parents was like, yeah, here you go. But after the 4th show, that was up going, you know what I mean? So after, like, as I got older and older and older, I was like, the money and the resource that my parents were able to give me is just not going to cut it. So I had to kind of dabble. But that was it. It wasn't for me to like, you know what? I'm going to get this just to go here, just make a lot of money so I could take this one and go do it up. It was for me to get from place to place to place. And I think that was the mentality of Black in the days. It wasn't a lot of greed. It was somebody to come in there. And even like now, some of those people come there just for that. You know what I mean? Just to sell this and that. They don't even come there for the music. It was way less of that. Not saying it didn't happen by then, but it was way less back then than it is now. for sure.
Yeah, it's just it's a big money thing. There's a huge market. There's people who want to exploit it, and you know,
I still get caught in the middle. It sucks. I still get caught. There's nothing worse than walking down or in or out of an event show, and somebody's asked me about a goddamn balloon. If you, like, it's the most annoying. And you know what? It's the people that I'm usually with who get a little bit more pissed off than I do. You know what I mean? They're like, dude, that's so fucked up. Like, you know what I mean? That's because everybody don't mean he's out here selling blues. Like, you know what I mean?
That's fucked up.
It's fucking annoying. It's like,
it's super fucked up.
Yeah. I'm like, I should take your fucking money. Like, yeah, I got up, take it and go back. But it's like,
oh, man. You know dude. $20 and just
taking that. Yeah,
it's right over there. Mm-hmm. Just keep walking. Crazy. Man. Well, thanks so much for taking some time to be on the show. And I appreciate you wanting to come on and talk about the old days with me. And are you planning to see the fish anytime soon? Are you doing MSG or any of that?
Of course, man. Like I say, my wife is also a fish fan. We used to, you know, I met her during the fish days and she was out on fish tour as well. And when we had my first, like, son Kingston, we used to take him to a bunch of shows when he was younger. Then we had my daughter Marla, we took her a couple of shows, but after a while, my wife was just like, eh. So now I have to kind of like do my fish stuff a lot more planning for just me. So I am going to go, always go. I'll always find a way, always kind of do my own thing. But I do want to do the seer, man. I do want to do it. I gotta experience it. You know what I mean? I just gotta people say it's gonna look just as cool on couch tour. Not really. Couch tour is probably one of the greatest fucking inventions in anything for us people. Man. I mean, it's like, and I think I remember texting you one night. I was like, bro, couch tour. It's great. It's so good that people actually try to count couch tour shows as their show count. That's how good it is.
Sometimes people bring that up. Yeah, they're like, well, I watched this many on.
No.
But
it is. No. But I do want to experience going down there or going over there and put my feet in that sphere just to experience it for myself. And I will be at the festival. Me and my wife did say we was going to take the kids to Delaware, which is actually not maybe 3 hours from here. So we are going to do
great.
It. Yeah, we
do. Are kids into fish?
Are they? Yes, my son Kingston, he gets very, very, very upset when I tell him I am going on some type of fish tour in the summertime and he is not invited. So I'm one of those parents. I'm one of those parents who have to do the thing with the seen those and be like, hey, this is your son, blah, 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 you know what I mean? I have to do that for him at this point. And my daughter was actually my daughter, her name is Marley Joy, and me and my wife could not figure out a middle name for her at some point. And I went to Miami. I can't remember what year it was. She's 4, so whatever Miami thing was 5 years ago. I went there, and arguably intoxicated, just Joy came on, and I got this sense of feeling guilty because she was like, you know what? You got to slow down on these shows because we got to have 2 kids. Da, 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 da. I'm like, yeah, I got you. This is my last trip. Da, da, da. And so as Joy came on, I did the call thing, Joy. I was like, that's it. And her name was named after that moment of Marley Joy from the actual Joy song.
Incredible.
So, Yeah. Moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that is a moment I would tell her when she gets older, if she hates fish or loves fish or not, but she will still be named from that moment.
Whether she likes it or not.
She likes it or not. She's a part of fish history.
Kind of cool. She'll have a recording of the moment. Again, whether she likes it or not, she'll have a recording of the moment.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Warren. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much for having me. And like I said before we start recording this, man, keep doing your thing because, like I said, this is a scene that a lot of people outside here are trying to come up off of and just create content each a certain way. And it's been doing in a very unauthentic way. And when I first saw your stuff and your content, I'm like, this guy's doing it right. You know what I'm saying? He actually not only is putting his time into it, but he's actually doing it in a very feasible way. And I appreciate you for doing that. And also appreciate you for having me on, man. Let's keep doing you, buddy.
Thank you, man. That was so nice.
No problem.
Too nice,
man.
Dude. Come on, man.
No doubt, brother.
Folks, that was my conversation with longtime Fish fan Warren Carroll. Really, truly one of my favorite interviews I've done on this season. I think that his look into how Fish was back in the day is a conversation that I've been itching to have with people. I want to talk to everyone who saw every Fish show in the 90s, if I possibly can, to get every account from everyone. But Warren's is super cool, and I'm happy to have had the chance to speak with him about it. We've kept up about stuff, and he's going to be going to shows this summer. So if you see Warren out at a show this summer, maybe don't ask him for gas. Yeah. Maybe keep that to your fucking self. How's that sound? No, Warren was super chill for coming on. It was great to get a chance to talk to him. We've got another episode out right now as well with the drummer from Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, Gator. And Gator talks about some pretty epic shows as well. There's also bonus material out on the Patreon right now. If you are not a member of the Patreon, you are missing out on bonus material every single week from these episodes that I clip out and put up there. I also put these episodes out a week or a day in advance. And so Patreon members have already listened to this episode like 24 hours ago. This is old news to them by now. And so if you'd like to be a Patreon member, go ahead and pay your $4 for your membership fee, and then you've got access to everything that you could ever want under the sun in the best show ever world. That helps support the show. That helps keep things going for me. It helps me improve things. I hope that you guys have noticed some improvements in this season since last season with all of the donations that you guys gave in last season. I've updated the Wi-Fi situation for myself. We have updated my laptop situation a little bit here. Not the laptop, but just things that help make things run a little bit better, sound a little bit better. And I'm still getting better at all that. And thank you guys for sticking in it with me through it. I really appreciate it. It's about the clunkiest outro as I could possibly deliver you guys. And so that'll be it for me, guys. Hope you enjoyed these episodes this week. And until next time, have a great show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.